Today we will try to complete the balance final verses of chapter 4, and then we should start on chapter 5. So last week we were into verse number 13. We are in the midst of verse 39. Okay. Now, in this final few verses, Krishna is emphasizing the glory of jnanam, the path of jnana yoga. So, in this verse 39, he explained to us how is one able to attain jnanam. And one of the very important criteria is shraddha. One must have faith. So in this very famous, in fact this line is very famous in the Gita, shraddhavan labhate jnanam. Shraddhavan means the one who is endowed with faith. What will happen when this person has faith? Labhate means attains jnanam. Eventually, if you have faith, you will come to attain jnana. And last week we asked the question, what should you have faith in? Faith in what? Faith in the scriptures, that the words of the scriptures are true. Number two, faith in the guru. Some more?
Yourself.
Faith in yourself, very important. And faith in God. So we should have faith. We have not realized God. We have not realized what is this knowledge. At least we should approach it with faith that it is true. So one criteria is shraddha. But faith alone is not enough. So Krishna says in the second line of verse 39, tatpara. Tatpara means you must be sincere and committed. If you want this knowledge, you cannot treat this as a part-time activity or part-time hobby. You have to dedicate time and attention on a daily basis. Because it is very easy, once we are engrossed in the world, then this knowledge gets lost. So on a daily basis, we have to keep on reinforcing our intellect with this knowledge. So tatpara means you must have commitment to this knowledge. Otherwise, it will remain as knowledge. It will be information that does not lead to any transformation. It will just remain as information. So the second important quality is tatpara. Be sincere and committed. And the third quality he also gives in line number two, samya tendriya. There are two words there. Indriya means your senses. Samaha means to be disciplined, to have mastery, to have control over your senses. And this concept about having mastery over the senses has been constantly repeated throughout the Gita, starting from chapter 2 itself, when Krishna explained to us by using an allegory of the turtle, if you remember. The turtle withdraws all its five senses. When does it withdraw? When it senses danger. And what does it withdraw under? The shell. What does the shell represent? What is our shell? The knowledge or your mind or your intellect. So with that knowledge, you should be very conscious where your senses are roaming around. One should have that mastery. With the mind, you should be able to discipline the senses. Why is it so important to discipline the senses? What is the reason? It keeps on repeating about discipline the senses. Why is it so important? Exactly. We need our mind to focus. The danger of the undisciplined senses is it can leave your mind away somewhere else, which he also told us in chapter 2. He said what? In chapter 2, the senses, the wandering senses, the undisciplined senses will kidnap, he used the word haranti, prasabam manaha. They will kidnap, they will drag your mind away somewhere else. So that mind is no more available to listen to this knowledge. That mind is no more available to read the scriptures. You are reading something, your ears pick up some other sound, immediately where is your mind? It goes off in the direction of the sound. So discipline, samyat indriya, is very, very important on the spiritual path. If you want to gain knowledge, you have to have some mastery or discipline over the senses. Hence, the three qualities are given to us to attain knowledge. One is shraddha, have faith. Number two, tatpara, be sincere, be dedicated, be committed to the knowledge. And samyat indriya, be a master of the senses. Then only by leading a disciplined life, by devoting your time to the study of the scriptures, by having faith, you will definitely, Krishna says, you will definitely labhate jnanam. You will attain that knowledge. And one will ask, what is the benefit of attaining this knowledge, which Krishna also tells us in this verse 39. He says, jnanam labdhva, when you have attained this knowledge, and attaining this knowledge is not just knowing it. Knowing it is not going to help you. You not only have to attain this knowledge, you have to absorb this knowledge and you have to apply this knowledge in your life. So first of all, why is daily study recommended? Because this knowledge must become a deep conviction in you. In order to become a deep conviction, you have to keep on reading and contemplating on this knowledge. That's why sage Vasishtha said in one of the scriptures, he said, this knowledge does not become firm in you. This knowledge does not become firm in you until it is heard again and again, and until it is contemplated upon again and again. So you have to constantly hear it and you have to constantly contemplate upon it. Then only the knowledge becomes a deep conviction. When the knowledge becomes a deep conviction, then only you will apply it in your daily life. And then what is the benefit if you are able to apply, absorb and apply this knowledge? Krishna says, jnanam labdhva, when you have attained that knowledge, then param shanti, you will attain that. Param means the eternal shanti, peace. You will definitely attain that state of peace of mind. Because now with the knowledge guiding your actions, there won't be disturbances in your mind. You have a very clear picture and understanding about life, about action, about everything that is going on. So you will not get disturbed. Therefore, the mind will attain a natural peace. In fact, the question is asked, why is it that we want peace and happiness? Why do we all strive for peace and happiness? Why? I know it's not a, you may think I'm mad by asking this question, but just think about it. Nobody does any action not wanting peace, isn't it? We all want happiness. But have you questioned yourself, why do we desire this happiness? Why do we all want happiness and peace? Right. So when we say we are basically like that, what do we mean by we are basically like that? What do we mean by this statement? Natural state, which is Sat Chit Ananda. Our real nature is Sat Chit Ananda. But because of these desires have led us to seek the happiness from the outside world, we have on the contrary end up destroying this own peace. It is just like water. What is the nature of water? What is the nature of water? What else? Still, what else? Liquid, colorless, tasteless,
pure.
It's not? It's running. What else?
It's formless.
Formless, okay. One of the basic natures of water is it is cold, right? nature of water is cold, but when you boil water, what happens to the water? It starts boiling, it heats up, right? Is that the real nature of water? No. When you remove the heat, what happens to water? It comes back to its natural state. So our natural state is Satchit Ananda. It is these desires which have started boiling our mind, and we are now in an actually unnatural state. We long to go back to that natural state, which is Satchit Ananda. And where is that Satchit Ananda?
Within,
not without. So we always will long for happiness. That is our natural tendency, to long for happiness. Our only problem is our seeking of that happiness is in the wrong direction. So that's why the scriptures say, turn inward, turn inward. That Satchit Ananda is internal. So to attain this Param Shanti, one must have this knowledge. Where is that Satchit Ananda? Because when we talk about knowledge, we are only talking about one thing. What is that? When we talk about Jnana Yoga, Jnanam, we are only talking about one subject matter. What is that? Knowledge of what? Knowledge of?
Self.
What is the ultimate? How do you gain moksha? How do you gain that moksha? When you know your real self. So knowledge is only about one thing, Atma Gyan. Atma Gyan. Once you know, have knowledge about yourself, your true real identity, moksha is automatic. It will come. That's why Krishna says here, Param Shantim Adigachati. You will attain that Shantim. And how long will it take? Achirena. Achirena means what? Soon you will get it. Once you have absorbed this knowledge, know your higher nature, I am Atman, it won't be very long before you attain this very peace of mind. So that, how to attain the knowledge, what is the result of the attaining that knowledge, was concluded in verse number 39.
The other thing, we need to cross these sheets, isn't it, in order to attain this.
The koshas.
Koshas. So, unless you cross those koshas, you cannot attain that.
Exactly. So the koshas are exactly this, the anamaya kosha, manumaya kosha, pranamaya kosha, vijnanamaya kosha are what? What are all these koshas made of? Anamaya is the body, manumaya is the pranamaya is the pranas, manumaya is the mind, more subtle is the vijnanamaya kosha. What are all these actually? Combine all these together, mean what are they? What are they? It is the perishable part of the body, the various parts of the body. Which is Atma part of this? No. So by going layer by layer, we negate. I am not Anamaya Kosha, I am not Pranamaya, I am not Manomaya, I am not Vijnanamaya. I keep on negating until I understand my real nature, which is beyond the five koshas, including Anandamaya Kosha. So once we negate and come to all the koshas, we negate and we come to our real nature, that is called Atma. Knowledge of Atma, Atma Gyan. So there are different ways to go about it. Okay. Now, as usual, when Krishna has already concluded the glory of this knowledge, the benefit of this knowledge, now in verse 40, he will show us the opposite coin, opposite side of the coin. What are the three negative in 39, he gave you the three positive traits that you need to cultivate knowledge. Now he's going to tell us what are the three negative traits that you have to avoid in order to attain this knowledge. And what are the three negative traits? The first one is ajnanam, ignorance, which is a tamasic state actually. When we are in the tamasic state, we have no interest at all in this knowledge at all. Wherever there are spiritual talks going on, wherever there are spiritual discussions going on, we are totally not interested. So the state of ignorance is a very dangerous state. Definitely we have to get out of the state of ignorance, ajnanam. What is the second one? Ashraddha. Ashraddha dana. Shraddha means faith. Ashraddha means one who lacks faith. One who totally lacks faith in the scriptures, he lacks faith in God, he lacks faith in gurus, everything he lacks faith in. And the third one is called Asamshaya. Asamshaya means one who has doubts. So three practices, negative practices, one is ignorance, second is lack of faith, and third is doubts. Now among the three, which is the most dangerous?
Doubts.
Lack of faith? All three? You have one choice. Out of the three, which is the most dangerous? Ignorance? Some say doubt. Some say lack of faith. Which is the most dangerous? Sorry? Doubt? Okay. How many people say ignorance? Okay, we have 5 here, 6, 7. Lack of faith? 1.
That's it.
Doubts? Okay, you all weak. Doubts is good. That's what Krishna is saying here. He says, out of all the three, if you were to have the worst quality, the most dangerous quality is having doubts. Because he says here, the doubting soul, there is neither this world nor the world beyond nor even happiness. We'll understand this. So among the three, he says that doubts is the most dangerous. Why? If we look at the first type of person, supposing he has no knowledge. Let's look at the first type of person. Let's say he has no knowledge, but he has faith. So, if he has faith and no knowledge, what happens? He can get the knowledge, right? And if he has no knowledge also, he may not succeed much in the material world. So, he may not have much material success. When we talk about knowledge, we are talking about both material plus spiritual knowledge. Now, if a person remains in a state of ignorance, you may not have much material success. But if you have faith in the scriptures, will you get spiritual success? Definitely you will get spiritual success. So at least you may not have material success, but definitely you will progress spiritually if you have faith. Right? Now, therefore, present life you might not have much material success, but definitely next life you will have a spiritual success. Okay. What about the second type of person? He has no faith. Does not believe in scriptures, does not believe in punyam, papam, does not believe there is swarga, there is naraka, totally does not believe, but he enjoys the pleasures of the world. He has no faith, but he enjoys the pleasures of the world. He has knowledge. What will happen to his material success? Definitely he will have material success, but he might not have spiritual success. But when we come to the third type, if the person is a doubting person, neither will he have material success, neither will he have spiritual success. So that's why Krishna says here, neither there is this world nor the world beyond. So neither in this life you will, if you are a doubting person, neither this life you will have happiness, neither in next life also you will have happiness. And what about moksha? You can even forget about moksha. Because you doubt everything. Materially you doubt everything, spiritually you doubt everything. You are never going to progress if you continue to have these doubts at all. So samshaya, Krishna says, is the most dangerous negative quality that you can have. If you are constantly doubting. In fact, you know, why is it that we keep on doubting the scriptures? We even compare a simple example. When we buy an airplane ticket, even buy an aeroplane ticket, the ticket says KL to Singapore. Do you have doubts on that you will never reach Singapore? Do you go to the aeroplane and say, I want to inspect the aeroplane, whether it's in a good condition? You bought the plane, right? With full confidence you bought the plane. Do you go and check that whether the pilot has got a proper flying license? Do you know what's the weather going to be like? Do you know, is there a terrorist on board the flight? Yet, what do? You bought with full confidence, with faith, isn't it? You can pull, you don't have any doubts. So if you don't have doubts by buying airplane ticket, then why you have doubts on the scriptures? So many doubts people have on scriptures. In fact, you know, I was reading an article. Do you know what is the biggest fear, three biggest fears in the world? There was a survey done worldwide among all the people. What is the three major fears of people in the world? Number one fear? No, death is not number one. What is number one fear? Fear of flying. Fear of flying. Majority among people have fear of flying. Right? Now, interestingly enough, majority of people have fear of flying. What do they call the building where you go to catch your flight? Terminal, isn't it? People already have a fear of flying, and then they call the building what? Terminal. Somehow more dangerous. Make people more worried. Terminal, you're going to terminal. And what is the second fear people have?
Height.
I don't know. Not height. Second is fear of public speaking. Many people have this fear of public speaking. You try. Get up in front of 5-10 people and try to talk. You know, I know first time I tried to talk, I was like that, you know, shaking all the way. It's not easy to talk to people. And the third is what you all said earlier, death. So fears are there. But doubts are even dangerous. When we keep on having doubts, we will never progress. Neither materially, Krishna says, neither in this world, neither in the world beyond, nor even will you have any happiness. No, na sukham also. There is no sukham also for such a person. And therefore there is no moksha. So the three qualities that we got to have, the three qualities we have to cultivate in verse 39, the three qualities we have to avoid in verse number 40. Now he concludes the discussion about knowledge in verse number 41 and 42. So he's summing up now what happens here. So he says, look at verse 41, the first line. Yoga sanyasta karmanam. Yoga sanyasta karmanam. Karmanam means here actions. One whose actions are, sanyasa here means dedicated. One whose actions are dedicated, how? By yoga. The word yoga here means karma yoga. So how do we start on the path of knowledge? First of all, in the initial phase, we must dedicate all our actions to selfless service, karma yoga. So the very first sadhana we have to keep in mind is dedicate all your actions and in selfless service. That means what? Dedicate all your actions to God. So overcome all your negative tendencies that we have. So the very first practice is yoga sannyasa karmana. Secondly, Krishna says, in the second line, jnana samchina samshayam. Remember we talked about doubts in the last verse. All your doubts, Krishna says, samshaya must be samchina. Samchina means you must dispel all your doubts. How? By jnana, by knowledge. So Krishna says, you must therefore question. That's why he told us, when you find a guru, question to remove all these doubts. So keep on questioning, keep on reading the scriptures, clear up all your doubts, remove, dispel all your doubts away. And finally Krishna says, when you are able to do this, that is, do selfless service, dedicate your actions to God, remove all your doubts through the process of knowledge, then he uses the word Atmavantam. Atmavantam means, then you will be established in this consciousness. The Atma meaning the consciousness within. So Atma Vantam, and once you are established in this consciousness, you have found this true happiness, this Satchit Ananda within, then Krishna says, Na Nivatnati Karmani. Whatever actions that you do, Karmani means whatever actions, they don't have a binding effect. Nibatnati means binding effect. Therefore every action does not accumulate punyam, it does not accumulate papam at all. So every action becomes pure. And finally in verse number 42, he finalizes, or rather he summarizes the two sadhanas we need for spiritual progress. So this verse 42 is a conclusion of the whole chapter, where he says, Tasmat, therefore, says Krishna. Now look at the second word, Ajnana Sambhutam. Sambhutam means arising your ignorance. Jnanam is knowledge, Ajnana is ignorance. Where is this ignorance coming from? Krishna says it arises from your wisdom. Wisdom means from your very mind. That's ignorance is in your mind. It is not something external. All the ignorance that you are carrying is all within you, in your mind. It is born in your mind. So, here he says, therefore, what have you got to do? When that ignorance is in your mind, how do you remove that ignorance? He says, remove it by, he uses very strong words here. He says, chitva. Chitva means you have to cut away with a sword of knowledge. Just like if you want to kill a tree, what do? You chop the roots away, isn't it? So the very ignorance is within you. You've got to remove this ignorance from in your mind. It is not something outside. By doing all kinds of actions, you're not going to remove the ignorance. The ignorance is there within you. You've got to cut it right at the roots itself. And what do you cut it with? With knowledge. So use the sword of knowledge to cut this ignorance away, which is deep rooted in you. Because this is the very cause of all your problems. So he says, chitva, cutting all this with the sword of knowledge. That is the first practice. The second is, he says, atishta. You see the last word. Atishta means practice karma yoga. Do your duties. While you are cutting away your ignorance with knowledge, carry on doing all your duties for the purpose of purifying yourself. So both these sadhana must go hand in hand. Cutting away the ignorance with the sword of knowledge and carry on performing all your duties, your responsibilities. And then finally, what is his final instruction to Arjuna? Utishta Bharata. Bharata means Arjuna. Utishta, arise and go and fight. Meaning what? Arise and go and do your duty. It's very important because that is part and parcel of your spiritual growth. We must not ignore our duties. And thus he ends the discourse chapter 4, which is called Jnana Karma Sannyasa Yoga. Jnana, knowledge, equip yourself with knowledge. Karma, perform your actions. If you have right knowledge and you apply to do the right action, Sannyasa means then only there will be renunciation, total detachment. Now, this last verse that Krishna has spoken, yes?
The verse 41.
Right.
There is the term there, who is self-possessed, isn't that
negative? Yeah, no. Again, translations in English sometimes given here a bit. What you call, must not take the direct translation. It is actually Atma Vantam, each one who is engrossed in the self, one who has found the happiness within. Atma Vantam, self-possessed. The word self here means the Atma.
Awareness.
Yes, self-awareness, exactly.
Who is aware, not possessed.
Not possessed, yeah. Maybe the word possessed is wrong. Self-awareness is a more better word to understand that. Okay. So now when Krishna closes with this verse, telling Arjuna to rise and go and fight this battle, go and do your duty, it poses another question in Arjuna's mind. And there are two things we have to understand, especially in these chapters 3, 4 and 5, there are two main concepts which are discussed and we have to understand this. So what are the concepts? We have to go back before we look at this chapter 5. We have to go back into chapter 3 itself. The first doubt that Arjuna raised to Krishna. Chapter 3 verse 1. And what was that doubt that Arjuna raised to Krishna, chapter 3, verse 1. You got the page? What the page? 59. That doubt, Arjuna is asking Krishna, Jayasi che karmanaste mata buddhir janardana. Tat kim karmani ghorema niyo jayasi keshava. Arjuna is questioning Krishna because we have to see the link between chapters 3, 4 and 5. Arjuna is questioning Krishna, if you consider knowledge more superior than action, then why are you constantly pushing me to do this dreadful action? Karmani gore. Gore means dreadful. Karmani is action. What was the action that Krishna was pushing Arjuna to do? Fight the war. Which Arjuna considered a dreadful action because it involved killing his beloved people. And yet Arjuna is saying, Krishna, you have been glorifying knowledge. If you are glorifying knowledge, then why should I go and do this action? Now, where is it that Krishna glorified knowledge? In chapter 2, when Arjuna surrendered to Krishna, the first thing Krishna spoke to him was about the path of Karma Yoga. If you recall, in chapter 2, you go back to chapter 2, starting from verse number 40, page 42, all the way up to verse number 50, from 40 to 50, in these 10 verses, Krishna spoke to Arjuna about the path of Karma Yoga. And then he explained to him everything about Karma Yoga. After explaining to him about Karma Yoga, at the end of chapter 2, Krishna then spoke about the glory of knowledge, Jnana Yoga. And what did he say about Jnana Yoga? If you look at the closing verse of chapter 2, verse 72, page 57, he concluded by, if you remember the term that Krishna spoke about, so first he spoke about Karma Yoga, chapter 2, verses what? 40 to 50? 50, right? Okay. Then he spoke about this at the end of chapter 2. If you remember this term, Stita Prajna. What does Stita Prajna mean? What does Stita Prajna mean? Prajna means knowledge. Stita means steady or stable knowledge. So that means, what is he talking about here? Jnana Yoga. In the closing 18 verses, Krishna highlighted about this Stita Prajna, the one who is endowed with this spiritual knowledge. And he concluded by saying in verse 72 that such a person, a Stita Prajna, what does he attain? In verse 72 he says, that person attains God realization. Now, therefore, Jnana Yoga leads to God realization. Now, therefore, Arjuna is now confused. He is saying, okay, if Stita Prajna gives me peace of mind and leads to God realization, why should I then fight this war which is causing me nothing but trouble and sorrow, isn't it? This war is not giving me any peace of mind. Yet you keep on urging me to go and fight, then you tell me that gaining knowledge will give you God realization, will give you peace of mind. So why are you confusing me? Therefore, the whole of chapter 3, Krishna spoke about first Karma Yoga. The whole of chapter 3 itself is entitled Karma Yoga. Because Krishna wanted Arjuna to understand that everybody has got to start with Karma Yoga. You have to start by doing selfless actions. Not only doing selfless action, But how do you convert all your duties as a surrender to God? Therefore, your everyday duties, if you can convert it to surrender to God, then that is called Karma Yoga. So, to define Karma Yoga, it is right action. Is right action enough? Now, many people say, I am doing my duty. This is my duty, I am doing my duty. What more do you want me to do? Is just doing your duty enough? Right attitude. So, Karma Yoga is right action plus right attitude. This is the thing that Krishna wanted to emphasize to Arjuna. Why you must do Karma Yoga? Why you must fight this battle? Surrender to God with the right action and right attitude. What is the end result? What is the end result? Purification of mind. Purification. Remember, Karma Yoga does not lead to moksha. It leads to purification of mind. And why must we have purified mind? To go on to Jnana Yoga, which will lead us to moksha. Okay? So, with purification of mind, go to Jnana Yoga and then it leads to moksha. So, he explained to Arjuna the glory of Karma Yoga, the whole chapter 3. He glorified and explained to him. And then in chapter 4, Krishna spoke about Jnana Yoga. He came to Jnana Yoga topic. And what did he say about Jnana Yoga, especially in that verse, chapter 4, let me just get that verse. Okay, verse number 33. Chapter 4, verse 33, page 94. What did he say about Jnana Yoga? What is the link between Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga? In the last two lines of verse 33, he said, Sarva karma akhilam partha jnani parisamapyate. Sarva karma, all the actions that you do, sarva karma, on the path of Karma Yoga, parisamapyate, culminate in knowledge. So that means, without Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga is not possible. Without Jnana Yoga, Karma Yoga is not complete. I repeat, without Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga is not possible. Without Jnana Yoga, Karma Yoga is not complete. That means your spiritual journey is not complete. You need both. But you have to start with Karma Yoga and go to Jnana Yoga. Now, up to this everything was okay. But, one problem. The very next verse, 34, Krishna said, how must you go and get this jnana? You have to go and search a guru. You have to go and search a guru. You have to bow down before a guru. You have to be humble. You have to serve him. You have to question the guru. Right? So now, he said that to get jnana yoga, you need a guru. Fine? Then what does he tell Arjuna at the end of chapter 4? The last instructions to Arjuna, what does he tell him? He says, Utishta, Arjuna, go and fight. Now Arjuna is more confused. Now you are saying, go and get knowledge. To get knowledge, I need a guru. To find a guru means I have to reduce my activities. And this is one of the misconceptions which is going to be cleared up in chapter 5. Because to all of us, we feel, how are we going to go to the Jnana Yoga path, go and look for a guru, which means I got to withdraw from my house, isn't it? I got to withdraw from my activities. I got to devote more time to the guru. I got to devote more time to the knowledge. So that means what we think, only those people who are totally sannyasis, who are totally renounced, only they can get moksha. How can I, as a householder, involved in so many problems and this and that, how am I going to find the time to go and look for a guru and get knowledge? Right? So now a doubt comes in Arjuna's mind, which we look at chapter 5 verse 1. Then that now Krishna, you are telling me Utishtha, go and fight, when just before that you told me that a guru is very important to gain knowledge. So now Arjuna's doubt about karma yoga and jnana yoga is very clear. Arjuna knows I have to go through karma yoga and then do jnana yoga. But now another doubt which has arise in Arjuna's mind, now this regards what we call choice of lifestyle. And in the scriptures, generally there are two lifestyles which are prescribed to us. One which we call as grihas, which is what we call as a family lifestyle, and the other is sannyasa, which is life of renunciation. Right? These are basically the two lifestyles. Now, common misconception is to take up jnana yoga, to get a guru and pursue jnana yoga, which lifestyle is more conducive? Two, right? So we would think that what chance have we got? As a grihas, how am I going to pursue jnana yoga? I have so many disadvantages already. So is it necessary for us all to take up sannyas? Why no? You all want to say no, definitely. So we must understand, therefore, what is this meaning of renunciation? This is what chapter 5 is all about. What is this meaning of renunciation? So here, first of all, as far as we are concerned, we know between karma yoga and jnana yoga, there is no choice. What we want to know, between grihas and sannyas, is there a choice? So now, what the scriptures say basically, we can go through the four orders of life, that is brahmacharya, before this grihas comes what? You get, first is brahmacharya, which is student life. Then you finish the student life, you go on to family life, grihas. Before you become sannyasi, there is one more stage called vanaprasth, which is a retired life. And then you come to sannyas. That is a natural progression. But what the Gita is presenting here, and also the Upanishads, is that you have two choices. You do not necessarily have to go through all this. From brahmacharya, you can skip grihas, you can skip vanaprasth, and you can go on straight to sannyas. That is one option. Don't get married, don't start family, don't start business, go to ashrams, take up sannyas. Second option is what? From brahmacharya, go to grihas and don't even take up sannyas. You can remain in grihas and also attain moksha. That lifestyle is also possible. So it is not necessary for us to take up sannyas. But if you want to, the option is up to you. But it is not necessary. So conclusion is what? Between karma yoga and jnana yoga, there is no choice. But between grihas and sannyas, there is a choice. Now therefore, both a sannyasi and a grihas have got to perform these two duties. Karma in grihas, a karma yogi, you have to do karma and you have to do jnana. In sannyas also, you have to do both also. You have to do karma and jnana also. Why? Karma you have to do to purify your mind also. And then you go on to jnana. So both are important. You have no choice in karma and jnana. Is that clear? Okay. But in terms of lifestyle, you have a choice. So let us look now at Arjuna's question in chapter 5 verse 1. Now the question also we have to ask ourselves, which lifestyle is the most ideal lifestyle? To reach moksha, which is the most ideal lifestyle? Family life? Why do you say family life?
Why do you
actually what you are saying is easier, right?
Yeah.
But actually both have advantages and disadvantages. What is the advantage of Grihas lifestyle? What is the biggest advantage of Grihas lifestyle?
A lot of distractions because
no advantage. What is the advantage? I'm not supposed to fulfill your desires. Dharmic desires, yes. You can fulfill dharmic desires. You fulfill all the desires. That is not karma yoga. See, what is the biggest advantage? You have resources at your disposal, isn't it? Money you have, everything you have, friends you have, family you have a support. So you can rely. There is food on the table, there is shelter over your head, there is clothes to wear. Everything is provided. You have security. Okay? Biggest disadvantage? Lot of distraction. Relatives are there, friends are there, neighbors are there, social clubs are there. Lot of distraction. In sannyas, what is the advantage and disadvantage?
No advantage is any distraction.
Advantage is no responsibilities, no bank bills to pay, no electricity bill, no stock market to invest in. What to wear for party tonight, don't have to worry. There are no distractions. What is the biggest disadvantage?
Restrictions. You have no food. You
have no security. You do not know from where your food is coming. You do not have any shelter. You do not know what's going to happen tomorrow. Isn't it? You have no security. So both have advantages and disadvantages.
But
yes.
But the sannyas is at that level.
Right.
Where he doesn't have the need for food and
exactly.
doesn't have the need for anything.
Right.
And he's the blessing and he's enjoying the bliss.
So you have to have that attitude. That means if you want to take up sannyas, you must have that attitude of total surrender. Right? Otherwise it's better for you to remain as a grihas. Have the security and pursue jnana yoga also. So it depends on the state of our mind, right?
That means number three is better.
Number what? Why is that better?
No responsibility.
Then you got all kind of knee problem, eye problem, neck problem. You can't remember anything.
You don't listen to meditate and you forget why you're sitting there.
Okay. So now let's look at verse number 1. Now Arjuna asked this question. Right? He says here, both ashramas you are glorifying. You are saying karma yoga, grihas ashrama also is good and sannyas ashrama also is good. Now we are talking about ashramas, no more about karma yoga and jnana yoga. In fact, among the four ashramas, do you know which is the most important ashrama? Brahmacharya, grihas, vanaprash or sannyas? Which is the most important ashrama? Brahmacharya.
Grihas.
Why Brahmacharya?
That forms your foundation. Why Grihas? Knowledge.
Among the four, what I'm questioning is, among the four, Brahmacharya, Grihas, Vanaprash and Sannyas, which is the most important?
Grihas.
Why Grihas?
It supports the whole system.
Exactly. Without Grihas, the other three will fall down. Isn't it? Because Grihas is the only one that is earning money to support the other three. The student Brahmacharya needs the Grihas to support. The Vanaprasth who is retired also partly depends on the Grihas to earn and support. The Sannyasi definitely depends on the Grihas.
Pension.
Yeah, exactly. So Grihas is the foundation of the whole what we call the society. Grihas is very important, it supports everything. So now here, what Arjuna is asking, between these two, he says now let's look at the Sanskrit verses here. Sannyasam, the word sannyasam here means what? different terminology is being used, but the word sannyasam here means nothing but sannyas ashram. Okay? So here Arjuna is saying, you praise the sannyasa ashram, right, to renounce everything, and at the same time you are glorifying what? Yogam. If you look at the second line, the word yogam is there. Yogam is what? Yogam is grihas ashram. Yoga means life of activity, active lifestyle, which is in the grihas ashram. So Arjuna is saying, Krishna, you are glorifying life of activity, yoga, path of karma yoga. At the same time, you are also glorifying sannyasa. So now he is saying, between the two, yak shreyar etayor. Etayor means among the two type of lifestyles, ekam, just tell me one, which is tanme bruhi sunishchitam. Bruhi means please tell me which lifestyle of the two should I follow. This is what Arjuna wants to know now. Don't confuse me. Huh? Krishna never does the answer. So that question here Arjuna also wants to know, that by staying as a householder, will I also attain moksha, or should I take sannyasa and then I can attain moksha? So between these two lifestyles, ekam, please tell me one which is suitable for me. Now let us look at what is Krishna's answer. What does Krishna say? Like Sister Asha says, he doesn't give the answer. What does he say?
Choices.
Free will, exactly. So what he says here, he says both, ubhav means both, sannyasa, now look at the first line, sannyasa, karma yoga, sannyasa is sannyasi, karma yoga is grihas, okay, karma yoga means grihas, sannyas means sannyasi, ashram lifestyle, ubhav, both of these, nishreya, both are also good, both are also suitable, and the thing is, he says, both lead to moksha. Now look at the last two lines, but although he is saying both are good, what does he tell Arjuna? Tayostu karma sannyasar, for you Arjuna, because who was asking the question? Arjuna is asking, for me, which lifestyle is better? So Krishna is saying, both lifestyles are okay, but for you Arjuna, karma yoga vishishyate. Vishishyate means that is more excellent for you to follow a family, a grihas, a karma yoga, active lifestyle. Now this is Krishna's answer. So when we say both are same, means what? Neither one is inferior or superior. So we should not look down upon our grihas lifestyle. We cannot say that only the sannyasis can reach moksha. We have no chance at all to reach moksha. Which here Krishna is saying that both are equal. Both lifestyles will, later on he will say, both will lead to the same goal, which is moksha. So here he is saying, it only depends on your personality and your, your state of mind. Now we look at, in fact, Ramayana is a very classic example. When Lakshman goes to Lord Rama and says, I want to take sannyas, Rama says, go ahead and take sannyas. It is good, go and take sannyas. When Arjuna comes to Krishna and says, I want to take sannyas, what does Krishna say?
Go and fight.
Don't take sannyas. Now, two people asking the same question, but both being given a different answer. Why is that?
I don't know. Yes. Because in Lakshmana's case,
right,
he has already served Rama, so he technically has done his duty.
Right.
But then Arjuna hasn't done his duty yet.
Right.
He's running away from it.
Duty.
So
exactly.
He cannot take sannyas in a very troubled mind,
right,
knowing that he has not done his duty.
Exactly. So, correct answer. One who has gone through karma yoga, Lakshman went through karma yoga for 14 years, he served Rama selflessly, his mind was purified, he was ready to take sannyas. So Rama tells him, go ahead, take sannyas. But Krishna knows Arjuna is not ready. He's got all kinds of doubts and confusions and questions in his mind. He is not really purified his mind. He is not ready for sannyas. So for that person, he says, go and do karma yoga. So that's why directly he is answering him, that both the parts are good, but out of these two ashramas, karma yoga vishishyate. So for a householder, it is better, who has not purified himself or herself, remain in grihastha ashrama. Now in verse number 3, Krishna says, what is the real definition of sannyas? You must understand. Because sannyas is not just wearing out orange robes and sitting in ashram. Here Krishna gives a true definition of who is a real sannyasi. And who is that? He says, that person. Now, first of all, let us understand, what is the definition of the world? We have been interacting with the world throughout our lives, from birth to now. How do you define the world? What is your definition of the world?
A test.
A test. What else?
Not permanent, changing.
What is it? Sir? It's a game. What is the definition of the world? What is the true definition of the world? Sister said, to satisfy all our desires. It's Maya. So look at the definition of the world that Krishna gives in chapter 9, verse 33, page 177. Chapter 9, verse 33, page 177. In the third line. Lokam, the word lokam here is world. What does he say? Anityam asukam. This is the two definition of the world that Krishna defines as. Have you got the right page? Chapter 9, verse 33, page 177. So look at the third line, the Sanskrit verse. Anityam asukam lokam. What is anityam? False, temporary, impermanent. Right? Anityam. Nityam means which is real, which is true. When we say anitya means totally opposite, it is false, it is con. When we say false means what? Not that it does not exist, but what it was yesterday is not today, and what is today will not be tomorrow. It is constantly subject to change. Right? That's what we mean when we say anitya means false. Because when we say anything is true, means yesterday also it was true, today also is true, tomorrow also will not change. So can we say this body is nityam or anityam? Anityam. Is anything in the world, can you say, is nityam? Everything is anityam. It is constantly changing, it is temporary. And what else he says? Asukham. Sukham is what? Happiness. It is asukham. Now how can you say the world is asukham? Definitely there is happiness, isn't it? But yet Krishna says the world is asukham. Why? Birth and death. What do you mean by that? It has sukham. It is not that the world does not have sukham, but it has no lasting sukham. The world has no capacity to give you everlasting sukham. Therefore, if we look for sukham in the world, whose mistake is this? Our own mistake, isn't it? He's telling you the world is a sukham. Yet we are looking for what type of happiness in the world? Everlasting, unending, constant, permanent happiness. So who is at fault here? We are at fault here. So he's telling you that it is not that there is no happiness, but don't look for lasting happiness. Now if the wise one understands this, you don't shun the world. You don't run away from the world, but you live with the world with the right expectation. You know that the world is constantly changing. You know that the world can give you only temporary happiness. Therefore, you should deal with the world accordingly. You should not expect from what it cannot give you. What the world cannot give you? Permanence. What the world cannot give you? Permanent happiness. So don't look for it in the world. It is our mistake for looking for it. So that's why Vedanta defines the world as a projection of our mind. Now, what do we mean by the world is a projection of our mind? What do you mean by that? Vedanta constantly says that the world is nothing but a projection of the mind. What do they mean by that? When the world appears as God, our mind is still. When we look upon the world as God, our mind is still. When the mind is agitated, then God appears as the world. We see the world as it is. We see God as the world. That's when our mind is agitated. We see different shapes, sizes, colors and people. When our mind is agitated, God appears as the world. When our mind is calm, world appears as God. So that's why the scriptures say, divinize yourself, then look at the world. See the world, we see the world as it is. But we should see the world, how should we see the world? We see the world as it is, but we should see the world as we are. So divinize yourself. Once you have purified yourself, you will look at the world also as divine. You won't get confused. You will know that the world is anityam and asukam. That is the real nature. So now, coming back to our verse, what is the definition of a sannyasi? Krishna says here in chapter 5, verse number 3. A definition of a sannyasi, if you look at the second line, yo na dveshti na kamshati. The one who has no dveshti means what do you call it?
Duality.
Okay. Dveshti means what?
Hatred.
And kamshati means likes and dislikes. The one who has overcome likes and dislikes. And Krishna says, one who does not have any likes and dislikes, what is he? Look at the first line. Nitya sannyasi. Such a person is called a sannyasi, a perpetual sannyasi. So that is a definition of a sannyasi. It does not depend on your external clothes. It does not depend where you are staying. But it depends whether you have overcome your likes and dislikes. And there are what we call, see, likes and dislikes all of us have. Right? We cannot avoid likes and dislikes. So how do we overcome these likes and dislikes? We all have likes. We have human nature. Mind is there. It has likes and dislikes. So how do you subdue these likes and dislikes?
Discipline them.
How do you discipline them?
So that we practice moderation.
No, moderation is good. But how do you overcome your likes and dislikes?
Think of the higher.
Have higher values in life. Yeah, it's true. If you have a higher value in life, rather than just having base desires, you have a higher value in life, it helps. But day to day, we have to learn to convert our likes and dislikes into preferences. I like coffee, but if I don't get coffee, tea is there. So I convert my likes and dislikes into preferences. The more and more likes and dislikes we have, what happens? The more and more there are opportunities for our mind to get disturbed. I like this, I don't like this, I like that person, I don't like that person. But when we convert our likes and dislikes into preferences, I prefer coffee. But if coffee is not there, tea is okay. Tea is not there, milk is okay. Therefore, reduce your likes and dislikes. Convert them into preferences. So here he says, if you have these likes and dislikes, even ashrama life is going to be miserable for you, isn't it? Because you are not going to get the food that you want. You are not going to get all the comforts and luxuries of a household life. So most important, biggest barrier on the spiritual path is having all this raga dvesha, or what he calls here, dveshti kamshati. And therefore, in grihas lifestyle especially, there are many infinite factors that can affect our lives. right? Unlike sannyasa, there's not so many disturbances, but in grihas we have a lot of what you call situations we face that can affect us. So for that, what we need to do, it requires a lot of inner, tremendous inner strength. So we have to seek this strength, this inner strength, how? Through prayer, through meditation, through japa chanting, through reading of the scriptures, we have to build up this inner strength. Therefore, we are able to overcome our likes and dislikes. So one who has handled his likes and dislikes, yona dveshti na kamshati, is called a nitya sannyasi. You are a perpetual sannyasi. And what other qualities here we need also? So other qualities are, now before we gain knowledge, that's why it's very important to know, before we gain knowledge, we have to use karma yoga and bhakti yoga in order to build up this inner strength. Knowledge will come later, but initially we have to find this inner strength through karma yoga and bhakti yoga. So now, what other qualities that we need in this grihas ashrama? Krishna says, not only likes and dislikes we have to overcome, but also all our actions that we are doing, we have to convert them as a karma yoga. That means, how do you surrender to God all your action? So in the initial stage, we talk about our life is like an instrument in the hands of God. So all my actions are being done with as an instrument of God. So karma yoga life is very important for us to, what we call, get this inner strength also. Now, what else is important here? He talks about another important point. Nirdvando. Nirdvando means we will face all kinds of what we call opposite situations in life. Sometimes there is health, there is sickness. Sometimes there is victory, there is defeat. Sometimes there is joy, there is sorrow. All these kind of nirdvando, pairs of opposites will come into our life. So Krishna says here, we have to learn to overcome this nirdvando also. One day people, the same people may praise you, the same people may also insult you also. So we have to learn to overcome this nirdvando. And how do we overcome this nirdvanda, the pairs of opposites? How do we overcome all these experiences in life, the pairs of opposites? Don't get attached. How do you cultivate equanimity of mind? How do you become detached?
Through meditation.
Meditation comes later. But now you're experiencing different experiences in life. So, for the karma yogi at that initial stage, we have to look upon all experiences as Ishvara prasada. Everything that has come is from Ishvara. Because why I am a karma yogi? All my actions are being offered to God as Ishvara Arpanam. Therefore, I must look upon all nirdvando, all the various experiences in life as Ishvara Prasadam. And when we say Prasadam, means we cannot reject Prasadam. We have to accept Prasadam as it is. So nirdvando also, very important quality. And what Krishna says here, therefore, if you have this, if you have overcome your likes and dislikes, yona dveshti na kamshati, you have overcome nirdvando, all these pairs of opposites, then Krishna says, sukham bandhak pramuchyate. Bandhak means bondage. You are freed from this bondage. Pramuchyate, you are freed from this bondage. And you are also sukham. You are also comfortably in a householder life, you can reach this stage. Now, just think about it. In those days, when a sannyasi wanted to attain knowledge, what did he have to go through? If you want to take up sannyas to attain knowledge, what have you got to go through? You have to renounce everything. You have to go and search for a guru. You might have to trek many, many miles, look for an ashram. You have to undergo all kinds of austerities. You have to serve the Guru. So much of pain and sorrow you have to go through just to attain knowledge. But here he is saying sukham. In your household itself, with all your comforts, you can also attain this knowledge. In fact, now you don't have to go to Guru. Guru comes to you. In aircon, in light, everything. Those days they have to sit under the tree, out in the sun, in the rain. Nowadays, as a householder, sukham, you have all the comforts that you have. You come here by car, air-conditioned car, you come out, sit in air-conditioned room, everything is provided for you. So, in a householder life, there is sukham, there is comforts. But what we have to overcome? Yona dveshti na kamshati, likes and dislikes. And nirdvando, we have to overcome these pairs of opposites. So, when we come back next week, we will carry on with the discussion from verse number 4. Again, the prayer.
Vasudeva sutam devam kansa chanuram ardhanam devaki paramanandam krishnam vande jagadguru.
No, just one announcement, just give me 2 minutes. I have somehow been involved in this group called CARES, C-A-R-E-S, which is Cancer Awareness Research Education.